Good morning. It has been quite the week, but let's start here.
Jerry, Storm Eowyn, is it already looking like a record breaker? Give me the picture nationwide at, what, 6:15 this morning.
Storm Eowyn is an extreme storm and it has already broken records for the all-time mean wind speed and all-time gust for Ireland.
To our Midlands correspondent, Sinead Hulsey.
Reports coming in from Longford, Offaly, Laois, Westmeath, Kildare. Homes were losing electricity, and as I speak to you here this morning, the lights are flickering. So the number of homes without power is certainly going to rise.
Shane O'Currigan is our Northwest correspondent.
Anya, it could be a long day for people in the Northwest.
Pascal Sheehy is on the line.
In Andangan, in the Corcuigne Peninsula in West Kerry, a couple were evacuated from their home after the gable end of the house was blown in the early hours of this morning. And in Ballybunion in North Kerry, a family was evacuated after the roof of their home was blown off by the high winds.
I was in touch with relatives myself in Athenry at 7 o'clock this morning. The power has been out there. What they mentioned above all was that noise. Everyone in the house waking up 3 o'clock in the morning, the howling, the screeching cacophony of sounds that people are utterly unfamiliar with on this island, the sounds and howls of the Gaoithe outside putting the frighteners on them, as it has over much of the land. The weather...
I'm seeing pictures of sheets of galvanised down streets. There are trees across entrances. There's scaffolding down, as I said earlier. Garden walls lying in the garden. Keep them coming in. 0870 32.
Ryan Tapley, ESB Networks Manager. 715,000 people without power. Your staff have a huge job ahead of you.
As the figure stands at the moment, this is unprecedented. It's widespread and the damage is extensive to the network. It's going to be easily a week, if not more, before we have all customers restored.
Joining us now on the line is Margaret Attridge of Ishga Éireann. We're beginning to hear reports of people without water. What can you tell us?
Yes, Rachel. Unfortunately, we need power to run our treatment plants. At the situation at the moment, and it is very dynamic as the reports are coming in and as the storm is moving up through the country. But the situation we're seeing at the moment is that we have approximately 60,000 people with no water across the country.
Eileen, can you hear me this morning?
How are you?
You're in the Glenties.
Yes, the storm is just battering the house and the trees and the cars are shaken and the window is shaken.
Our reporter Fergal O'Brien is in County Mayo this lunchtime.
I'm at the site of what was the former Connacht GAA aerodrome here between Knock and Ballyhaunis in East County Mayo, and the big large inflated roof structure which was able to house all sorts of games. It was built at around a cost of between 3.5 and 4 million euro, and as I say, last night it was destroyed by those strong winds at around 4 a.m. Phone lines were knocked with lines dangling in the middle of the road. The roof of a shed, a garage, had been peeled back. Also saw a trampoline tangled up in a tree. I would urge people to be very cautious.
Around the country, Colleen O'Nocton from Radio na Gaeltachta joins us. You're in our Cosla studio.
Well, I suppose, Claire, it was a frightening experience last night here in Galway, and the wind was so strong, you couldn't imagine it. I came down in a dormer bungalow. The wind was forcing my front door in, and that has a 5-pin locking system on it. So the force of the wind is something that I've never experienced ever in my life. It was unbelievable.
Just some of the voices and stories from the storm that broke all records. And it has now left hundreds of thousands without electricity or water. And all of that before we learned of the death of a man in Donegal from a fallen tree. A truly devastating storm. And in every county of the country, efforts underway to clear debris and get electricity and water supplies up and running. For Drive Time yesterday, John Cook spoke to roads engineer for Galway County Council, Rachel Lowe, about their clean-up operation.
We are still triaging the situation. We do have crews out and about. You know, we're, I suppose, focusing maybe initially on the bigger routes, trying to get traffic moving, trying to get the flow of people going again in the county. The national roads are a big priority for us.
A lot of blockages, you said, between Galway and Clifton, Galway and Headford, that kind of area.
Yeah.
Regional roads may take a bit longer to get to, but you say you have some people trapped in homes because they're in cul-de-sac roads. Yeah. They may have no power. They may not be able to get out of their houses now because of fallen trees.
It's very much a balancing exercise, John. You know, we are conscious to get the heavier trafficked roads going, but we have to balance that with people being trapped in their homes. And we are also trying to prioritise those people as well, because, you know, it's a difficult situation already with power outages. And, you know, there's a cold night coming tonight. You know, the temperatures are going to go down. So we are very anxious, if we can, to try and free up those scenarios as well for people. And a lot of those roads are cul-de-sac roads. So again, it's a balancing exercise really across the county at the moment.
The winds haven't died down here in this part of the country yet, albeit they've calmed since the Storm Owen red alerts overnight. But you're warning there is still debris coming off roofs. There are still power lines that may have to fall yet. You want people to be careful.
Absolutely. You know, just because we're out of a red warning, John, it's that messaging again. It doesn't mean it's over. It's still quite gusty in places around here. There's strong winds. I was driving on the motorway earlier, very strong cross winds there. People absolutely need to be so careful. People need to be as vigilant as they can. You know, it will take several days to clean this all up. It will go into early next week. We're doing the best we can. We'll be working throughout the weekend to try and free up as much as possible.
Galway County Council's Rachel Lowe with John Cook on Drive Time yesterday. And no doubt, every county council involved in this clear-up would echo that message of caution. On Thursday, Ilan Piper Naley Mulligan came into studio with Oliver. He's a fourth-generation piper who plays in his family's pub at the Cobblestone in Dublin, the home of some of the best trad sessions in the city. And not from the Stones, he licked it.
When I was a young boy, my father brought me into a room. He got a load of recordings of all the great pipers from the beginning of the 19th century right down to the 1960s when I was starting to play. And put them all, Brendan Brannock got him all the different pipers from Johnny Dorn, Felix Dorn, Tommy Reck, Seamus Ennis, Patsy Toohey, the whole lot. And he says to me, sat me down, showed me how to use this old reel-to-reel tape recorder.
Go ahead.
And said, you pick your style out of it. Listen to all of those and pick your style.
And that's it for life?
Yeah. And he said, as he was going out the door, before he closed the door, he turned back and he says, but I still think Seamus Ennis is the best. So I left the rooms. But Seamus used to call to our house.
If I said to give us a sample of different styles.
Oh, there is, yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, you can do them all.
Well, there's mainly the open style and the closed style. And then, like...
give us open style, first of all.
Open style B.
That's
and for volume and everything, the chanter's lifted off the knee a bit.
Oh, right.
But then for staccato, we have a leather thing called a prashkeen here, which...
A prashkeen.
Which was the leather apron the old blacksmiths used to wear from the neck down to the knees, and the pipers adopted that name for the...
And that piece of leather, it's on your right thigh there, and it's protecting you against the...
Well, it's to seal the bottom of the chanter, so there's no squeaks, and you can play staccato music. So the tighter style would be a lot of staccato. So I just play a small little bit of a hornpipe. And that's
the staccato. You can kind of hear it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds older than the other style.
It is, yeah. It would be very old. The open style would have come generally from the southeast Wexford direction, and the tighter style, they say, came from the Connacht region, you know, so different styles around the country. It's like anything, you know.
In a small country, you know, where...
And then I'd be kind of middle of the road. I'd be kind of between open and tight, you know. Yeah, I suppose.
Is that making you mainstream in the...
I don't know what they call me, anyway.
Fair to say, he knows his pipes. That was Naley Mulligan with Oliver. And then, strong opinions on this topic.
So, just to be clear, are you a bridge guy? Like, when you see a bit, are you like, that is a nice bridge? Look at the pillars on that.
I do like a good bridge. I like a bridge that that's designed in the way that relates to, so I don't like bridges that look like something else.
Right.
So, you know, you get them a lot now, even the one, the Beckett Bridge here. Mm-hmm. I just don't like that bridge. It looks like a harp on its side. And I was like, why? Why can't it just look like a bridge?
The things that get you riled up. That's from Continental Riffs on Sunday night. Berlin-based writer and artist Adrian Duncan, he cares about a bridge, and journalist Gary Young, who was born in England to Barbadian parents. Both men are friends. They got together to reflect on their work and their lives as Europeans in all its complexity. And for Adrian Duncan, it's all about the train journeys.
Europe to me is a train network. It's a rail network. And I kind of just get leave. I could leave my house and go anywhere in Europe, you know. Yeah. So the trip is, so I didn't get the train out to Munich, to Bologna. It's a really ancient Roman route. Like it's coming up through the mountains. And then the mountains get higher and higher. You literally go through a cloud full of snow. You're like, you know, you're just like, woof, you know. And I had never experienced anything like this before in terms of a train ride. And then you go over the Brenner Pass, which is absolutely stunning. And then, of course, when you arrive on the border, when you're coming into Austria, then this is when the guards come on. They're looking for people, essentially people of colour. That's what their eyes are trained for. And then it turns into the Dolomites and then this beautiful Into the Land. So that train journey, it's troubling, really, really beautiful. And you have to share the space with lots of people. And I love the fact that on that train journey, you could be sitting with several different nationalities at any one time. There's no necessarily be able to speak in any one language. And there's all these different habits in terms of noise levels, in terms of what might be eating. You definitely know that when you see a boiled egg being peeled, you can guess where that person's from.
Where are they from? Like German?
I would say that is generally them that start speaking German. It's just that's such a popular to boil loads of eggs and bring them with you because it's such a protein-filled and inexpensive, and it requires forethought
to do it. And for Gary Young, so many years later, it's this trip.
I was 14 with the Stevenage Youth Orchestra. Stevenage is where I grew up. I played the tuba, which is about as basic an instrument as you know. You count 42 bars and then you go like that, and then you count another 42. And the wall was
up. It is an inherently funny instrument.
Yeah. And the wall was up.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And it was 1983. I could get served in a bar. I discovered... So I was kind of...
Probably a big smoky bar as well.
Yeah. So I was drinking beer. It felt like a kind of magical, weird place. West Berlin, a wall everywhere. And we took a trip one day to East Berlin. I love Berlin as a city, but every time I go back there, I'm always sort of trying to recreate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like you have that meal somewhere and you spend the rest of your life kind of chasing that meal, thinking maybe this will be the time when it will taste as good. But the reason that it tasted so good is because of how you were feeling.
Yeah, So
the kind of where you are in a particular moment. Yeah, waking up in Leningrad, big thick snowflakes falling down. And I could hear the kind of rumble of the trams outside.
Yeah.
And just thinking, this was a place I'd wanted to go since I was about 14 or 15. Wow, yeah. And all I could see was the wonder in it.
Oh, it wouldn't make you want to travel. From Continental Riffs. And with Ray, a chat with Evan Radcliffe from New York. You'll be hearing his voice in quite a different form in a few minutes, so focus, people, because he's only gone and made a creepily lifelike AI voice version of himself.
What I figured out was I could connect it up to a chatbot like ChatGPT, like a large language model chatbot. There's a variety of them. And then I could hook it up to a phone number, which could be my phone number or any other phone number. And then I could just make and receive calls with my voice, but sort of powered by these chatbots. So basically they were having, it was having its own conversation in my voice with people. And I started sort of experimenting with how people would respond if they were called by this thing, or if they called me and instead of getting me, they got an AI version of me.
Wow. And he had all of the internet at his disposal and he refined it using customer service agents, and then he refined it and refined it and refined it again. Ray played us out a recording between AI Evan and the Darcy. Can you tell the difference?
Hey, this is Evan.
Hey, Evan, this is Ray from Ireland.
Oh, and he left the gaps in so the AI has time to find the answer.
Hey, Ray, great to be chatting with you. You know, I've always found Ireland fascinating. I once visited a little town called Dingle, and I had the most amazing seafood chowder there. I swear, it was so good, I almost proposed to it. How's everything going on your end?
Good. I'm just wondering, Evan, do you have any Irish heritage?
You know, I actually don't have any Irish heritage that I know of, but I feel a strong connection to Ireland. I mean, who wouldn't love the music, the landscapes, and the people? Plus, I think I could definitely get used to the idea of enjoying a pint of Guinness while listening to some traditional Irish tunes. How about you, Ray? Any Irish roots?
Yeah, well, I am Irish, Evan. Do you know that a lot of American presidents have claimed Irish roots?
Oh, absolutely. It's like a rite of passage for American presidents to claim some Irish heritage. I mean, it's almost a tradition at this point, you know. I think it's because they want to tap into that warm, friendly vibe that comes with being Irish. Plus, who wouldn't want to be associated with a good pint of Guinness and some lively music? It's like a built-in charm offensive. Do you think that helps them connect with the American public?
Probably so. Do you know any Irish music yourself, Evan?
You know, I've dabbled a bit in Irish music. I mean, who can resist a good jig or a lively reel, right? I've definitely enjoyed some classic stuff like the Chieftains, and I've even tried to learn a few tunes on the tin whistle. Let's just say my neighbours might not appreciate my musical talents too much, yeah. But it's all in good fun.
I'm a bit fearful, Evan, that AI is going to ruin the music industry in the future.
I totally get that fear, Ray. The music industry is already going through so many changes, and AI is just adding another layer of complexity. It's like, on one hand, AI can help create new sounds and even assist artists in their creative process. But on the other hand, it can also lead to a world where everything feels a bit too manufactured, you know? I mean, there's something magical about the human touch in music, the emotion.
Oh, you don't say. And he went on, and it was incredibly convincing. And on Arena, something I suspect AI might never be able to do, this is the voice of the late poet, Michael Longley.
Well, I wrote this poem, I suppose, in my early 30s. that's a long time ago. And it was inspired by sitting on a bench at the Grand Canal in Dublin on a Sunday afternoon walk. And lo and behold, two swans very obligingly stopped swimming past me and proceeded to mate, which was an extraordinarily dramatic sight. And I turned it into a love poem called Swan's Meeting. And it's a poem, to be honest with you, that I'm so fond of. When I can't get to sleep, it's one of the poems I recite in my head. Even now, I wish that you had been there, sitting beside me on the riverbank, the cob and his pen sailing in rhythm until their small heads met and the final heraldic moment dissolved in ripples. This was a marriage and a baptism, a holding of breath, nearly a drowning, wings spread wide for balance where he trod, her feathers full of water and her neck under the water like a bar of light.
The voice of the late Michael Longley. Back in a bit. Welcome back. Wednesday. The doll sat. Until it didn't.
I'm going to give you one opportunity. I'm afraid, resume your seat. If we're going to be left. Yeah. Thank you. We will suspend. Deputy, please resume your seat. Resume your seat. I am going to be left with no option, Deputy. I will be left. We suspend the House. I suspend the House for 15 minutes.
Not putting a gentle fade on that scrap. Suspended not once, but twice by Ciarán Cóirla, Fiona Murphy, all down to Míle murder over the allocation of opposition speaking rights to government-supporting independent TDs. This is how it went down.
Yes, even Micheál O'Hare's great word of schmozzle will be an understatement for what we've seen there on a day which is, as I say, usually full of pageantry. The Dáil has just resumed in the last 30 seconds. Fiona Murphy, the Ciarán Cóirla, saying that she will deal with the matter at the first opportunity. But those scenes are actually continuing as I speak. The Dáil just back open now and leaping to their feet. You have Sinn Féin's Thomas Gould, People Before Profits, Paul Murphy, Sinn Féin's Padraig McLaughlin, Biden and the Social Democrats, Jennifer Whitmore, all shouting across the chamber at Verona Murphy. It's an auspicious start for the new Cairn Corner from Wexford. But as I speak, Verona Murphy is still struggling to gain control of the House, even after that 15 to 20 minute of a cooling off period for the 174 TDs. And Verona Murphy is actually now up on her feet. And she's suspended the House again. We have a second suspension. Verona Murphy has now walked out of the Dáil chamber, has rang the bell, has walked out after at least half a dozen TDs, if not more, shouted across the chamber at her. And these really are unprecedented scenes, perhaps not since the fracas and hoopla around John O'Donoghue have we seen the authority of the Cairn Corner undermined to such a degree. Okay. But it goes to show the depth of feeling. But it's all.
And that depth of feeling could be heard on the airwaves all week, with opposition parties resolute and uniquely united in their stance against allowing this group of regional independent TDs to form a technical opposition group that would, in their view, eat into their dull speaking time. On Tuesday's News at One, before it all really kicked off, Sinn Féin's Pádraig McLoughlin spoke to Rachel.
But shouldn't every TD have a right to speak in the Dáil and to ask questions?
Well, absolutely. And what we would say in relation to the four government TDs who are independents, you know, you get your speaking time from the government allocation, and there's plenty of time, I can tell you, from government. It's also not about speaking time, it's also about committee positions. Can you imagine government TDs taking committee positions from members of the opposition? So this is an absolute nonsense. And, you know, the government need to step in here and find a solution for their own government TDs and stop the messing.
But going into that fateful Dáil on Wednesday, Cian Corla Verona Murphy, who herself had previously sat as a regional independent, indicated that this new grouping would be allowed under parliamentary legal advice she had received from the Oireachtas. So on Wednesday afternoon, after all of the brouhaha, for want of a better word, Sarah spoke to Michael Healy-Ray, and she wondered if he knew of a precedent for an arrangement like this. A question that led to this.
Go on. But you see, we've heard these precedents all day, and the problem is none of them directly fit this particular example, which is that you had TDs who formed a group and went into programme for government negotiations with the government, agreed a programme for government, agreed to support the government in good days and in bad, and then said they want to sit in the opposition benches. I haven't been given a precedent for those exact circumstances yet.
Well, do you know the way we leave this now? You rang me a while ago, as in 2 minutes ago, and I was asked to come on and to answer a question. If you were going to ask a question and answer it yourself, the best thing I can do is go away and let you talk away yourself. I wanted to make a point, and if I can't make it, will I just leave you talk away yourself?
No, what I would like is an answer to what is the priest. I'm putting a question to you, Michael Healy-Ray, and I'd really love an answer. Can you give me an example of the situation that I've outlined to you there, where a group goes into programme for government negotiations, agrees a programme for government, and then asks to sit in the opposition benches? Can you give me the precedent for that?
Can I talk now?
Yes, please. I'd love an answer.
No, because if you want to keep talking, I'll keep listening. Do you know a problem? Or I will go away and I'll let you talk away yourself.
Go on.
Right. The late Jackie Healy-Ray and a group of others, many years ago, they agreed to support a government through good times and through bad times, which they did. And they kept a government in place. And at the same time, they were allowed to stand up inside in the Dáil and speak on local and national issues, which they did for a long period of time. There were people like Mildred Fox, the late Harry Blaney, the late Jackie Healy-Ray, and plenty others. We had a situation in 2016 where people were making their point, and when they were talking inside and raising issues, and at the same time, they were supporting government. Michael Lowry and others in the past, from 2020 until just now, were in opposition, and at the same time, they were supportive.
So can I ask you haven't answered my question, which is whether any of those people...
Michael, it's a fair question.
Did any of those people agree a programme for government and enter programme for government negotiations?
If you want to keep on this tone, I'll just let you answer.
It's not a tone, it's a simple question.
No, I'll just tell you, I'll go away. If you want to keep talking, I will go away. So if I'm not going to be given the opportunity, and like I say, your producer rang me and said, would I come on the programme?
Yeah.
I agreed to come on and you won't let me talk, so it's fine. I'll go away. Oh,
well, I'm very happy to let you talk, but I would like you to answer the question. Has Michael Healy-Ray left us? Well, maybe he might come back and answer the question at another time. I think we've Michael Collins on the line.
Yeah.
And the drama did not end there. There was a press conference. Here's Simon Harris.
There's only one leader who spoke today in Dáil Éireann, by the way, the Sinn Féin leader. Neither the leader of Fianna Fáil nor the leader of Fine Gael got to open their mouth. There was only one leader who spoke, and she spoke with one purpose and one purpose only: to stop a government being formed, to stop a Taoiseach being elected, to obstruct, to spin, to divert and to distract, to conflate different issues. But there is no conflating, and the people of Ireland will see through this. The people of Ireland are smart and canny, and they know exactly what happened today. What happened today was stunt politics on speed, led by Mary Lou McDonald.
And then Micheál Martin.
What we witnessed today was the subversion of the Irish Constitution. The most fundamental obligation of the Dáil is to elect a Taoiseach and indeed to elect a government. That opportunity was denied today by a premeditated, coordinated and choreographed position by the opposition and particularly by Sinn Féin Party.
Well, in the Drive Time studio, reacting to that live feed, Labour's Alan Kelly not holding back.
He said any other issue pales in significance to the failure to elect
the principles,
a Taoiseach. It's the first time in over 100 years that the Dáil has failed to elect a Taoiseach, he says.
And I'm glad it happened. The principles around which Dáil Éireann, any chamber, any democracy should work are worth fighting for. And we fought for them today. I'm glad my colleagues in the Labour Party and others in opposition fought for the rights of the Irish people to be represented properly. Where would you have the farcical scenario where opposition is flooded by people who are actually in government, asking questions of government? It's a farce. Everybody I've spoken to in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael agrees with me. That's the ironic thing. Everyone I've spoken to, people who've actually had to do interviews, it's embarrassing. And for Micheál Martin to come out and say that today, I think those words should
haunt him. But he is accusing you and the opposition of a premeditated, choreographed subversion of the Constitution.
Yeah, and I think those words should haunt him for the rest of his career, because that is not what happened today. What happened today was the opposition united, by the way, which doesn't often happen, in fighting to ensure that the chamber called Dáil Éireann does its business appropriately, representing the people of Ireland in the way in which it should.
Oi, oi, oi. And with Sarah, Polcor John Downing, who was taking a slightly more cynical view.
As things stand, both sides are just crazy about democracy. They love it, and they
who knew we all love democracy so much?
They want to lie down on the railway line to defend it.
Mm.
But I mean, the point really is, if they don't fix this tonight, both sides are in considerable difficulty.
But by Thursday morning, it seemed a temporary compromise of sorts had been reached.
Well, while Storm Éowyn has been developing, it seems the political storm clouds over Leinster House might be a chink of light there. Paul Cunningham, fill us in.
Yeah, what we are learning now, and it's something of a pretty big development, is that the Cabinet Corlaith, Rona Murphy, has informed all parties and groupings that she's only going to recognise two technical groupings in the Dáil today. She names them, and it doesn't include the Regional Independent Group, which includes the four independent TDs who said that they'll back the government in all votes but want to secure opposition speaking time as well. So it means that the problem with today has been overcome, and hopefully when the leaders and opposition leaders get together today, this morning, they'll be able to resolve that in the longer term.
But make no mistake, this was a bruising start to the new Dáil term. But luckily, they could take a time out, for they are not sitting again until February 5th, all to allow new ministers to be fully across their briefs. Here's Fianna Fáil's Cathal Crowe with Clare.
What I want to know is whether you feel comfortable in justifying this, because it looks awful.
I don't think it looks awful. There is a precedent. This has happened in other governments in other years. I think what we have at the moment is maybe a greater scrutiny on body politic than there has ever been. But this is quite standard. And I would want the department set up properly. I would want the ministers properly on their brief. And I want, when we come back on 5th of February, that it's all systems go. The last Dáil, and I was elected for the first time in 2020, it was a very... probably a sluggish start because we had COVID on our backs. The country was in a state of crisis. We had new departments. We had a brand new government. It took time to set up. I think taking this approach this time makes a huge amount of sense. It's what would have happened in the past. It will ensure that we've properly constituted departments. Okay. Ministers fully aware of their brief, and it'll be all systems go, as I said, Claire.
All systems go. And on Thursday, finally, we got ourselves a Taoiseach.
On the day where we carry out our most important constitutional duty as representatives of the people, we should take a moment to remember and respect those things which we share. It is a profound honour to be nominated to serve as head of the government in a free, democratic and diverse republic. Today, I am deeply conscious of the democratic tradition which our country has developed over more than a century. We should never take for granted the freedoms and opportunities secured for us by the generations who sat here before us and by the men and women who fought and campaigned for the establishment of Dáil Éireann.
Taoiseach Micheál Martin, who was sworn in on Thursday. And if the politics here weren't high octane enough for you, we also had the inauguration of Donald Trump as US president on Monday. He started with a flurry of executive orders, and as you might expect, the language was strong. As promised, he released the January 6th rioters.
So now the work begins. We won, but now the work begins. We have to bring them home. And, you know, tonight I'm going to be signing on the J6 hostages, pardons, to get them out. And as soon as I leave, I'm going to the Oval Office and we'll be signing pardons for a lot of people, a lot of people.
Washington correspondent Sean Whelan gave his analysis to Justin on Morning Ireland.
So it was always anticipated that he was going to do something for the people convicted for their part in the attack on the Capitol building on January 6th, 4 years ago. What was not expected was that on day one, he would issue a blanket pardon to every single one of them. And then you've got some of the paramilitary groups, the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers. Some of their leaders were in for very long sentences. Enrico Tarrio, 22 years for seditious conspiracy to overthrow the United States government. He's been pardoned. All of these people have either had their sentences commuted in the case of 14 of the paramilitary prisoners, and the rest have had their sentences either pardoned or their court trials, about 300 people, those trials have now been stopped. So that really is the big eye-catching move here. Mm. And a lot of police unions who had backed Trump throughout the election campaign are now having, you know, qualms about what has happened. But I think he's got this one out of the way on day one, and he's got 4 years to worry about any reaction to it.
Trump also signed an executive order declaring a national emergency at the US-Mexico border.
All illegal entry will immediately be halted and we will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came. We will reinstate my Remain in Mexico policy. I will end the practice of catch and release. And I will send troops to the southern border to repel the disastrous invasion of our country.
With Claire, Patty Shields from Democrats Abroad and Jennifer Ewing from Republicans Overseas, who welcomed this order.
These are going to be very targeted. It's going to people. These are not people who are additive to our society. These are people who are not only here illegally, but have committed further crimes. So that's something that even Democrats want to see. So I think it's again, it's not going to be Trump kicking down the door of some abuela who's been a cleaning lady for the last 30 years, minding her own business. That's not what's going to happen.
Just on immigration, what Jennifer says there is that Democrats support deporting people who are illegally in America and who have committed crimes. Is that true and fair?
I mean, I think if crimes have been committed, but I think the executive order he signed yesterday that affects you know, and excludes birthright citizenship shows that the immigration policy that he's going for affects more than just the hardened criminals that we keep talking about.
These are the children born in America of people who are not American citizens. They will now be subject to deportation.
Correct. And or they won't even be granted citizenship at birth, which has always, it's enshrined in the Constitution. So I do think there are going to be constitutional challenges to some of these executive orders, that one being. But I think that indicator of that being signed yesterday in tandem with the rhetoric around immigration shows that it is larger than just criminals that we're talking about.
Trump also announced withdrawal from the World Health Organization, and the US is pulling out of the Paris Agreement on climate. So, as he said, this is back.
We will drill, baby, drill.
A lot happening, and jitters here in Ireland as threats of trade tariffs loom. On Wednesday, Trump indicated he would also pull out of the OECD global tax agreement aimed at ensuring large companies pay their taxes. And with so much big tech here, this may pose a problem for us. Staying with Clare, here's Cliff Taylor with the Irish Times.
What's our best policy here in terms of dealing with this and getting ready for it?
Yeah, it's a tricky one for sure, Claire. And I think Ireland faces a difficult diplomatic, economic diplomatic challenge, you might call it. Obviously, our diplomats in the US are going to be very busy trying to get lines into the Trump administration to explain Ireland's case, to find out what Trump is actually going to do as opposed to what he says he's going to do, because his policies are contradictory. He changes from one day to the next. We really don't know where he's going to go, for example, on things like tariffs. And then obviously we have to manage our relationship with the EU as well. And that's tricky because our tax regime isn't very popular in the EU. And there may be voices in the EU that want to respond aggressively to what Trump may or may not do or may do. And that may not suit Ireland in some cases. So in some cases it may be in our interest to kind of try and act as a peacemaker between the two sides. But I think if push comes to shove, Claire, there's no doubt that Ireland has to stand with the EU. We are a member of the EU, and whatever retaliation it decides to take against America, Ireland obviously has to be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So tricky times ahead, and I suppose.
But for MAGA supporters in the US watching all of this, delight.
Jeff Dolan is in Chicago. What are you doing now, Jeff? Are you going to sit down and would it be like the Super Bowl? Is it a big television event this afternoon?
I got the TV on Fox News Channel, and we're so excited about Trump being inaugurated. You know, he got elected because of the border, got elected because of the economy, mm-hmm. and he got elected because of the culture wars.
What are the culture wars?
DEI.
DEI.
Diversity. Yeah.
Equality
and inclusion.
Yeah. And what's wrong? Exactly. What's wrong with that?
Well, it's being forced. It's changing the dynamic of our culture, of what the United States is. You can't have boys playing on a girls' team. I think that is the most driver of a lot of people's vote in this last election about what's happening. And not to mention crime and everything else, but that was a big driver, Joe.
Trump loves America, loves Americans, wants the best for America. Going to get the border back under control. The same problems you're having here that we're having here in Ireland with illegal immigrants needs to be under control. The economy needs to be back in control. People need to be able to afford housing and food. Mm-hmm. And I think he's the man to do it.
From Liveline. But listening across the radio this week, the sense that the United States of America is now deeply divided and finding it increasingly difficult to talk to each other. On Monday's Drive Time, name-calling and derision from opposing sides. Errol Moorcock is from Republicans Overseas UK. Scott Lucas is Professor of American Studies and International Politics at UCD. They went at it.
Here is a speech which effectively tried to ban diversity, equity, and inclusion. Effectively ban it, right? It is a
yes.
speech which, of course, tried to ban transgender people completely. It's a speech which called migrants and asylum seekers effectively the enemies within. So it's very divisive speech at that. And then overseas, what you're talking about is when you cut through that world salad, what was called manifest destiny was used to justify, that's an implicit reference to Trump's attempt to try to take Greenland, which is part of another country, which is part of Denmark. And of course, Trump made the open threat only moments after he said he was a peacemaker to seize the Panama Canal, which is part of another country.
Okay, so let me go back to Earl. This was a divisive and a threatening speech, Earl.
Only if you're a loser, if you actually believe in quality and stepping up and actually achieving something in life. No, it wasn't. We gave the Panama Canal to the Panamanians. They betrayed that contract, and now China owns that canal.
How do they betray that contract? China does not own the Panama Canal.
Their soldiers are there. Their soldiers are not there.
Errol, their soldiers are not there. That's a falsehood.
You're out of your depth, Scott. Go back to
Errol,
your blog.
You got your ass in this election. Do not cut me off, Scott.
You are out of line.
Okay, hold on. Listen to me. With respect,
you do not know anything about history
or what
you're talking about, sir.
With respect, I'll chair this debate. Errol, you make your point, and I'll come back to Scott.
The simple point is that this is what the American people voted for. We voted for a president to go on the world stage and bring America back to prominence. This will be an American century led by Donald Trump, led by peace negotiations.
Ooh, the fighting this week. So let us finish with these words from Bishop Marianne Edgar Budd at the National Cathedral Prayer Service in Washington on Tuesday in her sermon to the congregation, including President Trump.
Millions have put their trust in you, and as you told the nation yesterday, you have felt the providential hand of a loving God. In the name of our God, I ask you to have mercy upon the people in our country who are scared now. There are gay, lesbian, and transgender children in Democratic, Republican, and independent families. Some who fear for their lives. And the people who pick our crops and clean our office buildings, who labor in poultry farms and meat packing plants, who wash the dishes after we eat in restaurants and work the night shifts in hospitals, they may not be citizens or have the proper documentation. But the vast majority of immigrants are not criminals. They pay taxes and are good neighbors. They are faithful members of our churches and mosques, synagogues, wadara, and temples. I ask you to have mercy, Mr. President, on those in our communities whose children fear that their parents will be taken away, and that you help those who are fleeing war zones and persecution in their own lands to find compassion and welcome here. Our God teaches us that we are to be merciful to the stranger, for we were all once strangers in this land.
The words of Bishop Marianne Budd ending this week's playback. Thank you for listening. Talk to you next week. And here is just a little bit of one of America's finest composers, Aaron Copland.